weeknights from 6 on 2FM.
Good evening. You're very welcome to this show. Firstly, thanks to Lottie and Dave for driving us through the afternoon. It is Wednesday, June 5th. I am Shane Dawson and you are listening to Game On. Coming up between now and 7pm, we have our regular trio of midweek Gaelic games to bring you. Aoife Murray reviews and previews all the Senior Camogie Championship group games. Nadine Doherty looks forward to an exciting opening weekend of Ladies Football Championship action, while Damien Lawler has all the latest GAA news headlines. Anthony Pine is with us to look back on a long overdue win for the Irish men's national team, and more frustration for Eileen Gleeson's Girls in Green. As always, if you want to have your say, you can text us on 51552, WhatsApp 087 187 9200, or we are on X at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Yes, hello there. It's great to have your company on this Wednesday evening. Thank you for tuning in. Nadine Doherty and Anthony Pine are with me in studio at the moment. Nadine, we will be chatting Gaelic Games, the Ladies Football Championship throws in this weekend. Looking forward to it?
Yeah, really looking forward to it, Shane. A few nice fixtures in there. Dublin Mayo was probably the highlight, and we'll chat about that later. But yeah, it's great to get it going now. 10 weeks of
it's
action.
Been a long time
yeah. And it'll be like every weekend now for 10 weeks, so it's all go, yeah.
Brilliant. Very much looking forward to that. However, we're going to start with Association Football. As I mentioned, Anthony Pine is with us. Anthony, I know you were covering in detail the women's matches over the past while. However, you did watch the men's match as well. And there's a bit of good feeling, a bit of positivity, a win, a long overdue win, it's fair to say.
A win, a sweet win, Shane. Mm. I mean, 2 in our previous 11 prior to last night, and they both came against Gibraltar. So it's nice to win a game of football, and you know it matters just in the very basic sense that people turn up to these games. They pay to turn up to watch the Republic of Ireland. They give their time and make the effort to go to the ground, so it's nice that they can actually walk out of the ground in a good mood. And then having watched the women's team fall to a painful loss in Sweden earlier in the evening, It was good to end this in a positive, but it's, you know, typical with the Republic of Ireland's men's football team of late. It kind of throws up more questions than answers just with regard to the future, who is going to be managing that team come the really important games, which starts in September with the Nations League when England come to Dublin for the first match.
But a win must strengthen the case for John O'Shea being permanent Ireland manager, or is it a case of let's all just calm down a bit and Tuesday might be a bit of a dose of reality?
Well, look, if you were to say a win would strengthen the case to keep John O'Shea or to make him the permanent manager, then you would also have to say that had he lost last night, that would have weakened his case. Whereas I would say, look, the FAI, I mean, if they're allowing a game like last night to sway or influence their decision, you would be asking questions around that. I mean, if we go back to March, the FAI Director of Football, Mark Canham, said that existing contractual obligations meant that they would not be able to announce the new permanent head coach until April. And that was after John O'Shea had initially been announced as the interim manager. So the suggestion was that they had somebody lined up. That person was not going to be John O'Shea. But here we are now in June, and we still don't know the identity of the new manager. But and the main question with it around the change, if it is going to be John O'Shea, and it may be John O'Shea, and he's certainly done himself no harm in the March window and again in this window, just with how he presents himself, and the players clearly like him. A lot of them have gone on record and spoke very positively about him. And yes, it's good to get a win against a good hungry side who are going to the Euros. But you just think, like, why is it not being announced? Like, why not make him the permanent head coach now? Like, there is no benefit in waiting. They have one more game next week against Portugal. Mm. And then that's it. They're into the Nations League against England. So, like, which means that if it is a new person, if it's not John O'Shea, that person will have no games to prepare for a really difficult first competitive match. And clearly that's not ideal.
No, it beggars belief. A couple of texts in. Kieran in Mead: I thought Will Smallbone and Adam Eda played well last night. Good to see Jake O'Brien make his debut. Another texter says there seemed to be more energy and balance to the defence when Jake O'Brien and Liam Scales came on last night. So there were positives from the playing point of view, the style of play, and the young players as well, Anthony.
Well, I'd agree with all of those points from the Texters. You know, Jake O'Brien. I thought it was curious that he didn't start the game, to be honest. But maybe, again, it feeds into the sense that, you know, John O'Shea is in this sort of purgatory where he doesn't really know, you know, in terms of his own future. He's probably thinking, well, maybe I have to win. Maybe I have to get a positive result because he wants the job. I mean, he has not shied away from that. And that's no secret. So he leaned on a more experienced starting lineup.
Was that the safe bet, or might you then flip that and say, playing Shane Duffy, like surely Jake O'Brien doing well in France, that's the more safer option, is playing these young guys as well, and also playing younger guys like Jake O'Brien. If it goes well, happy days, you've given him a chance. If it doesn't go well, then at least John O'Shea can say, well, I've tried, I've offered him the opportunity as well, and he'll have many more, no doubt.
Yeah, in hindsight, yeah, I think, you know, when you look, when Jake O'Brien and Liam Scales came into the team, it just allowed Ireland to play a little higher up the pitch naturally because they have that a little bit extra pace. And the team just, I mean, it wasn't a great game, in fairness, Shane. It was scrappy and disjointed. Both teams made 6 substitutions throughout the match as well. But you can understand why he leaned into what he knows and the players that he's familiar with, albeit, yeah, didn't really work in a pretty poor first half.
Well, we will be previewing Portugal-Ireland in detail next week as well, and later on in the week, no doubt. Talking about the women's match then, a disappointing defeat, back-to-back defeats now against Sweden. This one in particular seemed really hard to take. A lot of the players, I saw comments from Jess Zhu, moral victories are of little interest as well. They seem to be really bitterly disappointed that they picked up nothing from the Swedish doubleheader. Would I be right in saying that?
Yeah, because this was the closest they got so far in the Euro qualifiers to actually getting a result. I mean, against France, England and Sweden in Dublin, they were 3 pretty comprehensive wins. I mean, it was only 1-0 in Metz against France, but, you know, realistically, France were always in control of that game, and they got an early goal, as England did in Dublin, and Sweden scored in the sort of first third of the match as well at the Aviva. And this Ireland team, they've lots going for them. They're extremely committed, and they're an honest bunch, and they've got some good players, but they're not, when you're playing teams of this sort of calibre, they find it very difficult to chase games, and that's not a new thing. You know, we've seen under Vera Pauw and at last summer's World Cup, like, the first goal is so important to this Ireland team. I think if Ireland had gone 1-0 up last Friday, I know they ran out 3-0 losers in the end, but had they got an early goal, which they should have done through Lily Ag, I don't think they would have lost the game. Like, they're very, very good at protecting a lead and digging in. 2 years ago, they went to Gothenburg against Sweden and they got a 1-1 draw that was massively important in qualifying for the World Cup, but they went 1-0 up in that game through Katie McCabe. But, you know, going 1-0 down and trying to chase against teams of this calibre, Sweden are, I think it was kind of, had been said that if they were going to get points in any of these qualifiers, Sweden represented the best chance of Ireland of nicking something. But they're ranked 6th in the world. And they'll go to most major tournaments as certainly one of the top sort of 5-6 teams that you would say have a chance of winning it outright. And look, it's just a quality thing, Shane. If you look at the standout players from the Sweden team in the last couple of matches, Johanna Rytting-Kanerud has just won her second Women's Super League title with Chelsea. Fridolina Rolfo just won her second Champions League with Barcelona. Their captain, Aslani, is with AC Milan at the moment. She's been with Real Madrid and won a league with Man City a few years ago. And you can go all the way through, not just their starting 11, but their squad. And it's just class, top level, elite class. And I think shorn of Sinead Farrelly, who's retired, and Denise O'Sullivan, who was injured, she had a knee injury, we really missed that composure in the team. There were positives. I mean, they were defensively excellent. I thought Caitlin Hayes was absolutely outstanding. I thought Jessu was very good. I thought Leanne Kiernan was very good. Their pace gave Ireland another dimension. But unfortunately, when they were taken off towards the end of the game, Eileen Gleeson couldn't replace pace with pace. And that was a big problem, because then they had no out ball and they just sort of sank deeper and deeper. And ultimately, the winning goal for Sweden was soft, but I suspect they would have found a way through regardless. I kind of felt it might have been coming, and yeah, it's been a tough couple of months for Ireland in qualification, but they really are coming up against the cream of the crop in this group. It's exceptionally difficult.
Yeah, cannot be overstated just how difficult the likes of England, France and indeed Sweden are. Anthony Pyne, we're going to leave our football chat there. Thank you very much for popping into the studio. We're taking a very, very short break, and then Nadine Tarty will be chatting at ladies football, the opening weekend of the championship coming up.
Game on.
Ladies football.
Now, Nadine Doherty is with us to chat ladies football. Nadine, it all froze in this weekend. The championship is back. What should we be looking forward to? What are you most looking forward to? Broad strokes, how is this championship shaping up?
Interesting, I'd say, Shane, because you look at the groups there, I suppose, very briefly. Excuse me, of Armagh, Meath and Tip. And Armagh, lots of people's favourites for the All-Ireland at the start of the year before a ball was kicked. They backed all that up with their massive win in Division 1. And then they go out against Donegal and put in a below-par performance, which seems to be the norm in Ulster finals the last few years. Armagh have been favourites the last 2 years. They put in disappointing performances. And then Donegal, when they've been favourites, they've been in disappointing performance. So look, not only that, then you have Amy Mackin, massive loss. You know, myself and Marie spoke about it last year. You cannot underestimate that.
Yeah,
it's huge, Shane. You know, best footballer in the country this year, and to lose her from a team like Armagh, who I suppose they do over rely on her in a sense, but
understandably,
absolutely, yeah. And she always delivers, and that's the thing. You know, when you have a player like that who always delivers, then you don't worry about over relying on her. But listen, they don't have her, so I imagine. Imagine that Meath and Tipperary now will have, you know, they have a little bit of a bounce off the back of that. Tipperary were fairly competitive in Munster, and you know, they'll probably target the Meath game to get something out of that. And then looking at Group 2 again, you know, Donegal wouldn't have fancied them to do anything in the championship. It'll be interesting to see if they can back up that performance. Waterford, you know, Group 3 then, for me, Laois are probably the only team in the championship this year who really look out of their depth, and I think will struggle. And then Group 4, Dublin, Mayo, Kildare, massive, massive group. And that's probably the one that I'm most looking forward to be honest. This weekend, anyway, is the Dublin, Mayo game in Parnell Park.
Okay, we will preview those matches very shortly. So, yeah, I suppose two teams going through to the All-Ireland quarterfinals, meaning the battles for second place will be extremely competitive, and those battles we'll see in live TV fixtures as well, which is good for the exposure of the game.
Yeah, it's brilliant. I think there's 15 live fixtures maybe, and whatever games aren't on live TG Cahir, they're going to stream them, which is fantastic. And then I think some intermediate games are going to be on as well. So it's brilliant, Shane. And again, you know, we talk about this as well. The exposure is brilliant, but then you want to try and get the balance of getting people to go to games. And I think there has been an improvement on that. And again, look, that goes back to Lidl and their campaign. So listen, the LGFA and Lidl and TG Cahir are doing everything they can to promote the game, and it's working.
Brilliant, brilliant. The first live TV game is the meeting of Donegal and visitors Kerry, the All-Ireland Senior Finals in 2022 and 23. That one is in Ballybuffet at 1:05, followed by the clash between Dublin, the Leinster and All-Ireland Senior Champions, and Mayo at Parnell Park at 10:03 for that one. So, broad strokes, we know who's in the groups, we know what's at stake, there's plenty of narratives, plenty of points to discuss. You mentioned the loss of Amy Mackin already, and I suppose there's only one game on the Saturday at 2 p.m. in the Athletic Grounds, and it is indeed Armagh and Meath. So Armagh's first outing without the aforementioned Amy Mackin.
Yeah, and I'm sure they've been working on that for the last few weeks, Shane. And up front, I suppose there's a huge responsibility now on Kelly Mallon's shoulders. You know, she's been their captain, she's carried them before in a sense when Mackin was absent. Excellent free taker, and I know she'll be looking to improve her performance from the Ulster final, so expect a big, big game from her. Back to Carlene O'Hanlon in the middle, Shane, you know, when she's on fire, it's very hard to stop our man. I think Meath will struggle with Carlene O'Hanlon, and I think around the middle third in general, it's where our man are very athletic, and I suppose I feel with Meath, it's where they're lacking this year. You know, they've been very, very strong there in years previous, but we talk about missing players, and I know I'm harping back here, but you know, Vicky Wall, Meath still haven't recovered from losing her, I suppose, to rugby. A lot will fall on Emma Duggan's shoulders. She tends to deliver. I think it'll be a big ask for Meath this weekend, and I do think Armagh will lift themselves and get over the line, but I think it'll be very, very tight, Shane. Mm. You know, if Meath, I suppose Meath can put pressure on Armagh if Meath can gain premier possession from their own kickouts. But if Armagh push up, which I think they will, and they have been doing that, and I think Armagh will attack from the back in waves, I think Meath will struggle with their pace, because Armagh just have that little bit more pace all over the pitch, and Meath will struggle with that. And again, as I said up front, if Emma Duggan is shadowed, and which she probably will be, I think Meath will struggle to get on the scoreboard properly.
So you'd imagine if Armagh are to prevail in Group 1, not looking too far ahead, because we will be previewing each, and the big battle there is going to be kind of Meath and Tipperary. So Meath, they will hope to get points, yeah, you know, from the start. But
Armagh, I would feel that Armagh are definitely favourites to get through from this group, Shane. And as I said, look, if they do get over the line, which I expect them to do on Saturday, then yeah, it'll be Meath and Tip for you. Unless, listen, you wouldn't know, Tipperary could put it up to Armagh even and take something from them. It's hard to tell what Armagh team will be out this weekend, Shane, and in this championship, and to see if they have recovered from both Amy Mackin and that performance against Donegal. I think the performance might weigh a little bit heavier than the Mackin injury.
Okay, and that was a bit of a shock indeed. On Sunday then, as I mentioned, live in the box, 1:05 in Ballybuffet, your own Donegal, Nadine, against Kerry. Nice handy one for Donegal to start off with, Kerry. Kerry coming to town.
They'll really look forward to it. You know, they will look forward to it, Shane, I'd say, because, and I know it's an old cliche, but they really have nothing to lose. And I don't think Kerry will fancy, you know, the journey up to Ballybuffet. You're looking at 7 or 8 hours, so they might imagine. They'll obviously go up the night before. But Donegal's performance was impressive, and Donegal will be organised. They'll play 15 behind the ball when they have to. They look to break. They know Ballybuffet, every blade of grass. They know the size of that pitch. They were very, very good on the break against Armagh, and they'll be very confident that they can do the same against Kerry. Kerry's pace, I would feel that Kerry have so much more pace than Armagh that Donegal will struggle with that, even with players back. And Kerry's movement is so good. Their lines of running is excellent. They have 6 forwards, not one that needs to be marked, you know, 1 or 2. So they have that different dynamic. But listen, Niamh McLaughlin is in unbelievable form, as per usual. And Donegal have good pace around the middle, Shane. They have a lot of young players who've come in there, and they've really lifted the pace of things there. And that's where I feel Kerry are probably at their weakest. They don't seem to have decided on a midfield pairing as of yet. They've chopped and changed. They just don't have that pace and solidity that they've had in previous years in that middle third. So look, Donegal will look to exploit that, and I think Donegal will also look to exploit the Kerry kick out. I hope they don't concede it, because again, you know, Kerry, I don't think they've decided on their favourite goalkeeper yet. Ciara Butler and Mary Ellen Bulger both played a half each in the Munster final. They've played a game here and there in the Munster final, and you know, they haven't really nailed the kick outs yet. So if Donegal push up on that, they'll give themselves a good platform off those kickouts. But look, Kerry have to go in as favourites.
You're posing a lot of questions, and a lot of questions for Kerry to answer. I know we're going into the opening round of the championship, but we're still at championship football, and that's a lot for a team that are going to have All Ireland aspirations.
Absolutely,
too many questions to be answered.
I'm finding it hard to figure them out, Shane, at the minute. Like, you know, Louise Navarro-Hurtig hasn't featured. I don't think she's played a full 60 minutes yet this year. Perhaps she's injured, I'm not sure. But for me, if Kerry are to win this All-Ireland, which, they've stated that's their aim, that's their goal, that's why their management team are back, she has to be fit and playing. And Danielle O'Leary, playing unbelievable football. You know, she's averaging 7 or 8 points. But for me, for Kerry, just to have that consistency. And I think for Louise herself, confidence-wise, she's definitely a confidence player. She has to be on that pitch for 60 minutes. Koch Lynch still has to come into the team. You know, there are a lot of players who have yet to come into the team. But I agree with you. I mean, time is running out, essentially. I know we're starting the championship proper, but as we said at the top of the show, you know, it's 10 weeks straight. And you kind of want to be, you know, getting things in order and getting a plan. But look, They breeze through Munster, in a sense. They're not going to be too worried about what me or you say or think. But I don't know. they're surprising me in a sense that things aren't more streamlined just yet.
You're telling me Game On opinions won't be nailed to the dressing room wall in Ballybuffet? Come off it, come off it. One team that do certainly have their house in order, Dublin. They are in cruise control at the moment. They host Mayo and Parnell Park 10 to 3 live in TG Car, as I mentioned. A huge challenge for Mayo to lift themselves from that Connacht final.
Yeah, huge, Shane. And a huge challenge because Mayo have had one competitive game, being that Connacht final, in 8 weeks, maybe 9 weeks. You know, that's huge. And I think going into that Connacht final, they probably did go in a bit cold, but their performance was quite disappointing against a Galway team that really they should have been beaten, Shane. For me, this Mayo team, I just find that they switch off in patches of matches. They could be dominant in the game, dominant in possession for 10 or 15 minutes for a full quarter. They might struggle up front, but and then they'll just totally switch off and they'll concede silly goals. If you do that against Dublin for a split second, we know they're going to punish you. So it's a huge task for Mayo. I'd imagine they'll be confident. You know, Mayo are a confident team. I think they'll come up here believing that they'll get something. I feel they'll be under pressure to get something. It's unlikely they will, because they have Kildare waiting in the wings, and Kildare for me are probably the team that I'm most excited to see how they perform. I feel they could either go out and really put it up to Dublin or Mayo, or it could be the complete opposite, depending on what players are fit, depending on what game plan they go with. But yeah, look, Mayo, big task. They're up against, listen, the best team in the country at the minute. I mean, Dublin are coming off an 18-point win in the Leinster final, you know, and Mayo are coming off a 2 or 3 point defeat to Galway. So there's huge gaps there. And listen, the most impressive thing about Dublin, I suppose, is their squad, Shane. They've retained last year's squad, as we spoke about before. Add Sinead Goldrick, Alwyn Carey, Nicole Owens, Aoife Cain back from injury. Their biggest problem, I suppose, and McBohan's biggest problem, is going to be who does he line out, you know.
It's a good problem to have.
It's a problem.
Absolutely a good problem to have. Briefly, just finally then, Laois, Cork. You would expect Cork to have a comfortable victory away to Laois.
Yeah, you would. I'd hope for Laois's sake that, you know, they've regrouped after that Leinster campaign, home advantage, and, you know, they'd know O'Muir Park fairly well. You'd hope that they, you know, put a bit of a performance together. But I think Cork, who do have aspirations, and they always do, of winning a championship, they really, really have to get their shooting boots on, Shane. And this is an opportunity for them to get their own confidence up and put a bit of a score up, just to give them a bounce now going into the rest of the championship.
Great stuff, as always. Here's hoping for a great weekend of ladies football action. Nadine Doherty, thank you very much for popping in to chat. Lots more Gaelic games to come here in Game On. Stick with it.
Game On.
GAA.
Now it is time to chat Gaelic games news with RTE Sports' Damien Lawler. And Damien, let us begin our chat speaking about hurling. And listen, there's no getting away from the big battle this weekend. Two of the greats of the game, two of the record scorers in championship history, TJ Reid going up against Patrick Horgan. It's going to be a titanic tussle this weekend, Damien, isn't it?
Titanic tussle is the word, Shane, and it's going on quite a while. And I don't, either of them will retire before the other. And it's fantastic for us to see, because they're two of the best we've ever seen. And currently TJ is just ahead. He has 32 goals. And he has 591 points in 87 championship games. And that's 687 points in total. And TJ became the first in history to get across the 600 mark. So that's 687 in 87 championship games. And Hoggy then, Patrick Horgan, has 28 goals and 592 points. That's 676 in 79 championship games. And while Patrick Horgan is top scorer from play by about 40 points, TJ has played more championship games. And then I suppose you'll probably have an argument over what has been more competitive over the years, Leinster or Munster. And then people will say, you know, some of the qualifying games that the Munster teams have to play after the provincial championship wouldn't be the most facile either, wouldn't be the most complex either. So the debate rages on, but TJ is in a very, very exclusive club. He's 30 goals hit in championship hurling. He's up in Christy Ring territory there, Shane, and I think there's very, very few have been there before. He's also on 13 All-Irelands, 7 with Kilkenny and 6 with his club Ballyhale Shamrocks, and that's obviously a joint record along with Henry Shefflin and Michael Fenley. So they're in esteemed company, the two of them. And when you're talking about hurling championship goals, you know, Seamus Callanan reached 40 in his career. Tony Doran reached the same. Eddie Kerr at 35. Nicky Rackard has 61 green flags in his time. But you're in esteemed company. And TJ and Patrick Horgan both started out in 2008. They're both on a serious shift in 2024. And this weekend, then, we'll see what happens. You know, Kilkenny play Dublin in the Leinster final. And then I suppose the following week, Cork will be out in the preliminary All-Ireland quarter-final. So it's likely, Shane, to take shape again and evolve. But it's a fascinating battle to watch.
An absolutely fascinating battle indeed, TJ against Hoggin. You're mentioning Christy Ring, Rackard, Kerr. Some company to be in, and isn't it a pleasure that we get to witness both TJ and indeed Patrick Horgan in their prime and continuing playing as well. Listen, sticking with hurling, there's a good feeling around Offaly at the moment with the under 20 success, and they do battle with Laois in the Joe McDonagh final. Obviously, Offaly defeated in last year's Joe McDonagh as well. Will they get over the line this time?
It'll be very, very hard for them. And I think the key question is for Offaly people, can a lot of the people that supported the under 20 team and the minor team of 2 years ago, will they turn out in force in Croke Park on Saturday? And the simple answer is they probably won't. And it's a different catchment that this under 20 team has compared to the senior team, even though there is a crossover of quite a few players from the under 20s on the senior panel. I think the under 20s have had a good following since they were minor. They were developing quietly under Leo O'Connor's stewardship during COVID, Shane. They had 26,000 people down against Tip in Nolan Park for the minor final 2 years ago. Tip pipped them at the post through a Paddy McCormack goal. They brought about 20,000 to Thurles last year for the under 20 final against Cork. They definitely had around 19,000-20,000 in Nolan Park again last weekend when they beat Tipperary in the All-Ireland under 20 final this time around. I'd say maybe if Offaly people can bring a crowd of 5,000 or 6,000 to 7,000 to Croke Park, it'll be a massive, massive achievement. And quite simply, the Offaly under-20s play freestyle hurling. It's man for man. They're very much off the hoof. I'm not saying for a second that what they do is not planned out. I'm sure it is. But they're just so spontaneous looking to watch. And they definitely have got the, I suppose, the passing Offaly GEA supporter, if there is such a thing. They've definitely captured the interest there. The while there is a few of them on the senior panel, it's more of a work in progress. That senior Offaly play through the channels in Joe McDonagh Cup level. They were extremely unlucky not to win the Joe McDonagh Cup final last year, but they got caught with the long ball into their full back line. Carlo cleaned up on that occasion early in the game, but Offaly came right back at them. But look, they play a sweeper, they go through the channels. It's way more tactical at that level, as it has to be, Shane. And they face a Laois side unbeaten in the league in the Joe McDonagh Cup this year, really reinvigorated under Willie Maher. They've already beaten Offaly, reversing the result of 12 months ago. So I think Offaly have it all to do, but my God, if they were to beat Laois and if they were to land the Joe McDonagh Cup final, a title, what a year it would be. Everybody knows Offaly have a distance to travel. Making that leap from McDonagh Cup up to McCarthy Cup is the hardest, it's probably the hardest leap in the GEA. You know, even to go from Tailteann to Sam is not as daunting as that, because immediately you're threatened with coming back down again. So big task for them at the weekend. But you know what, just to see Offaly back in Croke Park again, and look, you can't underestimate what it means for Laois either. Willie Maher has got everybody focused and galvanised this year. You know, it wouldn't have been the case last year. They weren't firing on all cylinders. They have serious hurlers like Aaron Dunphy, Picky Maher. They're as good as anybody at that level, and I think they'll fancy their chances of winning and holding their place at the top level next year as well. So it's a fascinating curtain raiser to the Leinster hurling final, Shane. And in many ways, it might even be a better game. There might only be a puck and a ball between the two teams here.
Well, here's hoping for two brilliant matches on Saturday. 3:30 for the Joe Mack final, and then the Leinster final, Dublin Kilkenny, throws in at 6 p.m. Both matches live on RT2 and the RTE player. Damien, let us end our conversation on, I suppose if I pose the question to you, will there be potential or possible changes to the football championship? Because at the moment, we're seeing across the board pretty much very poor attendances.
Yeah, certainly the attendances are way probably below what people have expected. For example, Roscommon and Mayo last weekend didn't get the biggest crowd. I think elsewhere, you know, even Meath versus Kerry, for the traditionalist years ago, I would have packed the place out, but certainly it was not the case last Sunday in Port Halton, and across the board maybe for the All-Ireland group stages, the attendances are slightly down. The competition format has only been in operation for 2 years, and I think that for many, many decades, the GAA were reluctant to change any format. So we probably have to give it a little bit more time. But I think, Shane, if any team gets through to the All-Ireland preliminary football quarterfinals, having lost 3 championship matches this year, well, then alarm bells will have to ring, because that simply would question the integrity of the competition, on paper at least, and that can't happen. And it's possible that may happen in the next weekend or two. We'll find out more. But I think a lot of people are saying, OK, the GAA always wanted to go into the last round of the All-Ireland stages with lots to play for and no dead rubbers. That certainly is the case. The payoff then is that there's not as much at stake in the opening rounds, because the last day everybody has something to play for. And look, it's been proven in the Tailteann Cup. Tipperary played Wexford last weekend. A lot of people expected that they're already out of the championship. They got a last minute goal against Wexford. They're in the prelim Tailteann Cup quarter final against Limerick this time around. So it does what it says in the tin. It gives you something to fight for going into the last day, but there's a lot of shadow boxing in the lead up to it. And if one team loses 2 group games, having lost the provincial championship match, yeah, there'll have to be something done about that. And I suppose what could be touted at a special congress in the future would be maybe scrapping the Division 1 and 2 league finals, leaving 3 and 4 alone, because for many counties, that's their big day out, that's their day in Croke Park, and that's their All-Ireland title, essentially.
Yeah.
But scrapping Division 1 and 2, saving a week there, and by cutting an extra team from the round-robin group stages, you're saving another week there. So you're increasing the jeopardy straight away, and you're finding 2 weeks in the calendar if they choose to go back to 2 weeks in August, Shane. So certainly all that will be up for review at the end of this championship, I'd say, which is coming around at the corner very soon.
It very much is. So we shall see. For now, Damian Lawler, pleasure chatting as always. We'll speak to you again next week. Until then, mind yourself.
Game on.
Camogie.
Now it is time to chat Camogie here on Game On, and Aoife Murray joins us on the line, as is tradition of a Wednesday. And Aoife, some big results last week in round 2 of the Camogie Championship. Some very one-sided clashes in Group 1, with wins for Kilkenny and Waterford and Tipperary over Antrim, Limerick and Derry respectively. So let's begin our review chat in Group 2. And in particular, I want to get your thoughts on Wexford 2-15, Galway 2-15, a last-minute free for Wexford to salvage a draw. Was this very much a case of a point gained for Wexford and 2 points dropped for Galway?
Look, as harsh as this might sound on Wexford, I do think it is. I think it is a point gained and 2 points lost by Galway. I think that's probably a fair thing to say, with the expectation of Galway winning that game. And that's no disrespect to Wexford. I thought they had an excellent league, unlucky not to win it. Beginning to come good. They seem to have a really good core group there. So I think it's a fair summation of the game. What really impressed me, to be fair, about Wexford is when you have a team like Galway, who have been in the top 3 for what, probably better part of what, 10 years or so, to come towards the end of that game, start getting 4 points ahead, you know, in the 49th minute, getting a goal, and especially being Aoife O'Donoghue, who carries a huge amount of the weight for Galway at times, you would have to say, oh, geez, you know, Wexford just fell short, didn't they? You know, they gave it such a great go for 50 minutes, you know, a huge amount of pride to take out of that game. But they completely and utterly refused to fall into that type, and came back. And I think, you know, when I looked back at it, you know, 4 of the last 5 points. So if you actually look at who finished the game stronger, it wasn't Galway. You know, Wexford really powered to try and get over that line. Excellent point at the end, because there was huge pressure, in fairness, at the end of that game to score that free. So I think to be honest, the story really of that whole weekend of Group 1 and Group 2 was Wexford. It kind of turned out into nearly a Kern v O'Donoghue, a game in many ways, being the 2 pivotal players, some injuries for Galway, potentially damaging some of their next rounds. But for me, I think the story was just Wexford's stubbornness, you know, resilience, and not being intimidated by one of the top three teams. And I think a bit like the Tipperary winning the National League, as I said, Waterford getting to the final last year, I think that's what you need to really see. That's what you need to really see. Teams like Wexford going, I don't care who you are, I'm not giving up. I'm going to still stick to my game and see who wins at the end of it. So I think that was probably the story of the weekend.
I nearly grouped the Cork win in with the Group 1 matches, considering it was such a large margin of victory. For Dublin, 9-point win over Clare. A good win and on their journey and different expectations, obviously, I'd imagine, for Dublin than your Corks, Kilkennys and Waterfords and so on.
Yeah, and I think, look, it was a good win in fairness, because I think we, like, chatted on the show last week, going, you know, Clare had got the first win that first weekend, Dublin lost, and it is a bit of a battle, not only at the top, but also at the bottom of the table. So for Dublin to have come out this weekend and secured that win, and a comfortable win, I don't think there was a huge, you know, different from the Wexford, as I just said about the fight and stuff. There wasn't a huge fight from Clare in that game. You know, that win for Dublin has now put them third. So on the grand scheme of things, I think that could be a huge win for Dublin. And again, look, they put up a good fight against Galway in that first round. So I think, you know, they're tipping away quite nicely. For me, I think when you look towards this weekend, you know, you see Wexford nearly pipping Galway on Saturday, Dublin coming out with a win. That's going to be a huge game, Dublin versus Wexford. Two Leinster rivals. I think that'll be an absolute cracking game and a hugely important game, because Wexford got a point at the weekend, but they're sitting second, bottom. So I think that's going to be an absolute cracker.
But let's mix it up then. We don't have to go review and preview. So just firing into Dublin Wexford then, who is going to get the better of each other in that one, considering the permutations that play, even at an early stage of teams wanting points on board and targeting particular matches?
Yeah, I find that I'm not going to do the whole political thing. Well, actually, I am going to do the whole political thing.
No, if you get off the fence now. I said dive in. We're going to dive straight in.
The question I would have for that game is, can Wexford back it up? You know, and that's the big thing. Can Wexford back up probably what was such a huge mountain to climb at the weekend, and never giving in, playing the full hour and drawing that game at the death? You know, can they back that up? Right, any Wexford team I ever come up normally could, right? Normally could. I think Dublin have kind of had the better of Wexford in the league. I think it'll be really interesting, because I think it could come down to a little bit of a physical battle. Normally, any physical battles with Wexford involved, I'd normally point towards Wexford being on the end of a few physical beatings by them. I would just slightly point to Wexford and be positive that they can back it up.
Even though it's in Parnell, even though they're travelling?
Yeah, I wouldn't. Look, you know, I don't know, is Parnell really any sort of a Dublin Camogie fortress either? You know, I don't know. And that's, look, I'm not trying to be disrespectful to Dublin here either, but I don't think if Wexford come out of it, it'll be because of a massive Dublin effort as well. I think it could be a very close game. I hope it's a close game, because as I said, I find it really hard to point one way or the other, just slightly favouring Wexford after the weekend.
The Clare manager, obviously we were chatting about Dublin beating Clare, and Clare manager has come out and said he's impressed with his young panel, and they're going to come up against a Cork side who have a 100% record in the championship so far, a comfortable 421 to 1-7 winners over Down. Is it going to be the case of more of the same for Cork and indeed Galway this weekend? Galway playing Down and difficult to learn much from a victory, or might Clare, perhaps not Down, put it up to their more superior rivals on paper anyway?
Yeah, it's a funny one in many ways, because I think, you know, the positive that Cork could take out of last weekend, because in fairness, you know, what could you have learned really from the weekend, right? The only positive I could think for Cork was did a lot of young players. They mixed the panel up quite a huge bit, mixed up the first 15 and the finishing 15 quite a lot. So I think, you know, Germanley would be walking away quite happy with that. Going into the Clare game, any games that I've seen over recent years, and even played in myself, they've always been very stubborn when they play Cork. Normally have a very frustrating first half. And, you know, as a player, you're normally looking forward to halftime to try and figure this out. How the hell do we shake Clare off? Normally, well, you know, and I don't think a whole lot has changed, whether they're a young team or an experienced team. I think for Clare going into the weekend, it's almost about how we can reduce the number of scores with regard to Cork. They're sitting for it. If they can try and keep Cork to a minimum with regard to a score difference, that could pay huge dividends to them towards the latter end of the round robins here, because it could come down to a score difference. So it's not just about winning for me, I think, Shane, at the weekend. It's really how close can Clare keep it and frustrate Cork. And I think if you're looking at this from a Cork perspective, having a game where you are frustrated to the hilt will make you learn so much more about your panel. It'll also make you learn more about your management and how both sets manage to problem solve. And I think if you are the manager of Cork, that's what you would be looking at. And how do your players handle the stress of being frustrated by a team you should be beating, and you should be beating by a margin? So I think if both teams could have that experience this week, and I think it'll go a huge ways in the championship for both.
That one throws in at 2 p.m. as does Dublin-Wexford. Dublin-Wexford and Parnell, as I mentioned, Clare and Cork in Ennis in that one. And just briefly, Galway, they host down 1 p.m. On paper, it's probably the perfect match to go into after being frustrated last weekend.
Yeah, it's funny. You probably say, Galway, listen, sometimes I don't know, Shane, if you've had a close call, are you better going straight into another battle? You know, and actually coming out of it going, geez, you know, we toppled the group leaders. It is kind of pointing towards that last game, isn't it, between Cork and Galway. I think that will be a one to watch. But here is a bit like Clare. It's going to be damage limitations for Down. They've had a poor championship. But look, they're Down Mallon, which I think how she has played for Galway since she's gone over there, and just shows just one, how class of a camogie player she is and how pivotal she is for any team. I think it was always going to be hard for Down. So it's a bit of a damage limitations, I suppose, day for Down and Galway. It's a, look, let's go, let's get a win and we move on. But I'm not too sure how much they might learn from that.
That was 1 p.m. In Pearse Stadium. I mentioned at the beginning of our chat, big wins in Group 1. Are there any takeaways from that round of fixtures for yourself, Aoife?
Not massively, other than it's a 3v3 in that group. You know, it's the three bottom versus the three top. I'm not too sure what any of the teams, both whether you were at the end of the beating or you're the one that gave the beating. I'm not too sure what they really learned. I think what it has pointed to is just the fact that the likes of Antrim, Limerick, Derry, they're so reliant on one or two players. You know, if you're looking at Antrim and you don't have McCormick, say, and Dobbins on form, like it's going to be a long, long hour for them. Equally, Limerick, if they don't have Costello on form, you know, there's not too many others. I know Delay's there, right? Mm. But other than those two, I don't know how many others are going to step up and take on that position. And the same goes for Derry. And I think that is probably the big thing that was highlighted last weekend. You look at Kilkenny scoring 6-15, Waterford scoring 5-15, and Tipperary scoring 5-22. Right, almost identical amount of scores for each of those three teams. You know, other than the likes of Waterford, I think, which was a really good game for them because they got a good few of their new young players involved. That's one thing for Waterford that I did worry about, was they were very tied to the 15. Where were the other impact players coming in off the bench? And they didn't have a huge amount of experience on that bench to come in. I think that really was highlighted in last year's All-Ireland, massively so, that they just weren't able to handle the injuries, etc., that happened in it. Whereas you look at the Goshi came on, scored a goal, first match in senior. So, you know, I think that probably is out of all the teams, that's probably one of the biggest positives out of the scoreline that you could take. Kilkenny seeing Miriam Walsh back into the fray, which was great to see, and such a pivotal player for Kilkenny. So it is a story of two sides to that table, unfortunately, from the weekend.
Well, can Waterford continue that then? Obviously, they took a beating to the league champions tip in round one and then the big win over Limerick. And now they travel to Kilkenny, 3 p.m. Nolan Park on Saturday. Can Waterford put it up to the Cats?
Oh, I absolutely think they can. Yeah.
Or should I say, will they? Will they be the more pertinent question?
Well, they should, is probably what I would say, Shane. They should put it up to them, you know. I think the fact that they've got O'Brien really now beginning to hit the back of the net. They're not just reliant on Carton or Bray. And I think that was the big thing. If Bray wasn't on form, they were up against it. If they had Bray and Carton not in form, you know, it was going to take a special effort to get them over the line. It positive, as I said from last weekend, was a few more players got debuts, got more minutes on the clock at senior level. So I think if there's one year where Waterford should or could take on Kilkenny, it would definitely be the weekend coming. As I said, Kilkenny, I do think they're going through a little bit of a rebuilding process. I'm sure they won't say that themselves, but I do think they are. So I think it is the perfect opportunity for Waterford to get one over on their neighbours.
How will that affect Kilkenny broader picture in the championship? You mentioned that kind of rebuilding process. I know Julian Malone was player of the match last weekend. It's well documented. Denise Gall over to Australia, Claire Phelan retiring. So how will that affect them long term in this year in particular?
Do you know, it can sometimes work so well for you. You know, I've seen teams and I've been a part of them where, geez, I remember one year we'd 5 or 6 of our 15 retiring or taking a step back, and you go, oh, we're in a rebuilding phase immediately. It never gelled us together, there was nothing like it that gelled us together. It was phenomenal. We closed the walls in and we said, absolutely, we're not rebuilding. We have enough players here in our panel to take on anybody. So I think you could look at that from a Kilkenny perspective. You know, they're extremely confident people. They're extremely talented people. So you could be totally twisting this into closing in the ranks, building a wall around that team and coming out with their shoulders pinned back and taking on anybody. So you would be hoping that that is the route that Kilkenny go down. You could go down the route of, well, look, we've got a few weaknesses here and there. We're rebuilding, and kind of you might take some of the lessons. I would imagine, knowing some of those Kilkenny people, they will absolutely go down the first route and very much closing in ranks and coming out fighting. Mm. But saying that, I still think it's an opportunity for Waterford to get one over on them.
They'll be wanting us folk in the media now. Kilkenny are in transition, write them off and everything. That's what they'll be.
It's all my fault. Yeah.
Elsewhere in that group this weekend, you'd imagine Tipperary will maintain their 100% start to the championship in the RAG against Antrim at 2 p.m. on Saturday.
Yeah, and look, you know, we mentioned Parnell with Dublin saying, I don't know what much of a fortress it is. Playing Tip in the RAG is hard any day, right? It's even harder for Antrim coming in off the beating that they got last weekend. So, look, I don't really have a whole lot to say, unfortunately, about it, other than I really hope that Antrim just try to frustrate Tipperary as much as possible. I would certainly be trying to play 7 defenders, seeing what you can get on the counter, because what you want to do is stop McGrath, right? You want to stop Howard, etc., coming at you. If you give any space, and Tipperary sometimes likes to play 2 up top, you know, if Antrim go man-to-man, I think they'll get opened up with regards to Tipperary's ability to score goals, and they're really goal-hungry. Have to give them that, Shane. Like, if there's an opportunity, they're going for it. So I would be very much Antrim. I'd be trying to close up shop as much as possible. It's not the biggest of fields. So if you can compact your defence, try and get them on the counter. And I think that's where you might be able to do a little bit of damage limitation, and hopefully maybe have 1 or 2 things work for you on the counter.
Antrim, of course, looking for their first points on the board. As are Limerick, who are in own bag, 2 p.m. throw in for that one as well, away to Derry. Derry have points on the board from their opening round win over Antrim. When we're talking about the split in the group as well, and
perhaps the quality levels might be a bit different with respect to the likes of Derry and Limerick. But in terms of a contest and targets and individual targets for counties, this hopefully will be a cracker in that regard.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly how, you know, why I'm actually circled around it going, that's probably the actual game of Group 1 this weekend. But I think there's a huge amount at stake. There's a great opportunity for Limerick to take themselves off the bottom of that table. Or at least give them a chance in the later rounds to do it. I think the big difference at the moment between Derry and Limerick is, you know, Limerick aren't scoring. They're not scoring enough. You know, Derry are ahead of them with regards to that win, but equally they've scored a bit more. They've also conceded pretty much equal too. So if you were Limerick, you need to, again, close up that defence a little bit and try and get the likes of Costello into as much space as possible. She will damage them. But Derry are a fairly stubborn team. You know, physically, they're a strong team. So I think for Limerick, it's really trying to play with as much pace as possible. And as I said, get Costello on that as much. But, you know, they've come up against very tough opponents in Derry this weekend. I certainly think it's the game of group one. So I think it's very hard to call a winner. I would just slightly go in the Derry direction.
Okay. Great stuff as always. Here's hoping for a super Saturday of Camogie Championship action. Aoife Murray, he'll be back next week to review all of that, and indeed to look forward to the next round of games. Just a round up: Derry Limerick 2 p.m. on Beg, Tipperary Antrim 2 p.m. in the Rag, Kilkenny Waterford in Nolan Park 3 p.m. and then, as we mentioned earlier, Group 2 Galway versus Down in Pearse Stadium at 1 p.m. and 2 p.m. throw ins for both Dublin, Wexford and Parnell, and Clare against Cork and Cusack Park Ennis. As always, Aoife Murray, thanks so much for taking the call.
Thank you.
Game on.
Camogie.
Now, that is all we have time for this evening. Marie is back tomorrow. Bernard Jackman and Rebecca Cray will be joining her in studio. Big thanks to Ronan and Laura Lee for working on this evening's show. Lots more to come on 2FM this evening. Bella da Silva is up next, so do stay tuned. We're taking a short break, then we're going to check in with the news desk. So, from all of the Game On team, it is bye for now.